Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast. It is episode 61, kind of a almost historic episode today. There's four of us in the studio, I've put in air covers. I'm Mel, I'm here with Elle.
Hi.
And Alice.
Hi.
And Jonathan.
Hello.
How are you doing? How's Very everybody good. Doing, first of all? Are we all good?
Good.
Yeah, yes. Good. It's a rare occasion, awesome foursome all together for the first time. Jonathan hasn't been on the podcast for ages. Where you been? What's going on?
I've been working from home a lot lately, so...
How are you finding the great work from home experience?
I kind of like it, actually.
Oh,
it,
cheers.
It's away from you. No, it's just... it's good to kind of get in your own headspace and also just work in your pants.
I like to think that you climb out of a coffin and then you're just already in your crypt and you just turn around and start working at your black laptop.
Yeah, but it's not like a climb out.
I love you going black laptop.
Yeah, it's not a climb out. I just leave it as a flat thing. You just leave her up.
And yeah, straight into the desk.
yeah, just hands and claws and keyboards straight away.
Goodness me.
That looked like Nosferatu when you did that just then.
Yeah, that was that was very vampiric. I just finished reading Salem's Lot for the first time, actually, so you're on brand for me. Where shall we start? There's a lot to go through today. I guess we should start with the brand new issue of Metal Hammer, which, as this podcast goes out, will be out now-ish. When are you going to put it up, Alice? It's out on Thursday. It's out on Thursday in the UK and online. So if you listen to it Thursday, it's out now. For the first time in way too long, we have welcomed back Amon Amarth to the cover of Metal Hammer. Fair to say, one of the most metal covers we've ever done.
Raise your horns, raise them up to the sky.
Yeah, raising to the sky. Done old Johan in a bit of a Game of Thronesy vibe, I guess we can say.
He looks like a big old king.
I'm gonna get sued for saying that.
A big old Viking king.
He's a big old Viking sitting in a throne with a massive fuck off hammer, and it looks amazing.
Yeah, if you've got a Thor's hammer, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about Amon Amarth on the podcast before. We love them, really intrinsic, important band to the world of hammer. We're really excited to finally get them back on the cover ahead of what I think we're allowed to say is a killer new album in Berserker. We've been listening to it. It's out imminently in about a month or so, I think. And excellent interview with Johan from Dave Everly as Amon Amarth prepared to make a real run at metal greatness, I guess. They're at the point now, aren't they, where they've headlined festivals, they're headlining big arenas, they've got a huge show. Can a Viking metal band from Sweden become one of the biggest bands in metal?
The drummer plays inside a Viking helmet.
Yeah, Viking helmet, yeah. They've got a boat on stage, dragons, fire, and genuinely one of the best metal bands of, I was going to say 21st century, but they've been going 25 plus years now, actually.
They do a good show, don't they?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're a great festival band. Mm. They're perfect festivals, especially when the sun's going down.
They are. And I think they're at a stage now, Amon Amarth, where they kind of recognise that. They know they're a big festival band. They're the band everyone sees as like a bit of a laugh. Get pissed, go have a good time, and then we forget about it. I think they want to establish a bit more of a legacy than that, and they kind of want to use this album as a way to step up and, well, in Johan's words, as far as he's concerned, when the Maidens and the Metallicas finally put down their instruments, Amon Amarth want to be there to pick up the baton and move forward. So it's a really interesting interview about all that kind of stuff and the new album and what comes next from them. There's also three Viking mead mats. Free Amon Amarth beer mats in the new issue. They're really cool. And if you pick
just
up...
Just don't try putting drinking horns down on them.
Yeah, that wouldn't work. Could you imagine? And if you pick up the issue in Tesco in the UK, you'll also get a free Amon Amarth patch, which is really cool. It's got like a runic Viking symbol on it. It is really good. And you can get it now. Also in the new issue, we look at one of the most controversial and hellacious tours of the 90s when Hole went on tour with Marilyn Manson. It's an awesome piece by Steve Hill talking to many of the people that were there on the front lines in the tour that basically, literally broke Marilyn Manson at one point and pretty much finished off Manson and Courtney's friendship for about 25 years. So well done. That's an awesome feature in there. We've got interviews with Possessed, Employed to Serve, awesome feature on The Prodigy and the huge impact that they had on the metal scene. Rest in peace, Keith, of course. We look inside the death gospel phenomenon that's sweeping the underground. We have a lost album special where we look at the lost albums through time that should have been but never were, from the likes of Deftones, Nine Inch Nails, Slipknot, Motorhead, Judas Priest, all those albums you heard about many, many years ago and thought, what the fuck ever happened to them? We find out, we look into it in the new issue. It's out now, well, out Thursday anyway, whenever you're listening to this in the UK. It's really, really good. And we do have an Amonimath bundle that we'll be launching next week that is fucking spectacular, if I do say so myself. So if you're a big Amonimath fan, and Lord knows you should be, pay attention to metalhammer.com next week for information about that bundle. It's really good. It's out Thursday. So there you go. I'm tired now. Someone else talk. You went to Roadburn recently.
I did, yeah.
How was that?
It was, well, I mean, Roadburn is always amazing. It always feels like a world unto itself. You just, the minute you walk into the street where the cafes are, you feel like you're in this own kind of look, this kind of bubble where everything is exactly how a festival should be. Everyone's like true genuine music lovers. It's just everyone feels the same spirit, they're there for the same reason. This year it kind of felt a bit more emotional. I mean, for lots of different reasons. I mean, there were, you know, there was memories to artists who have passed away recently. One of the most emotional experiences I ever had at a gig was seeing the tribute to Salim Lamouchi at Roadburn.
Mm.
And I can't even look at the video from that show without kind of shedding a tear. And this was.
So do you want to just talk about the concept?
Yeah. So, Salim Lamouchi was a singer of the Devil's Blood, and the Devil's Blood, you know, one of the biggest and important cult bands, and also just a great rock band too. And they broke up, they became Salim Lamouchi and his enemies, and it was him and his sister Farida. And there was supposed to be a Salim Lamouchi and his enemies show at Roadburn, but in between that getting announced and the show, Salim passed away, death by suicide. And so, you know, everyone, I mean, I have friends who knew him personally, everyone was absolutely devastated. And so they turned it into the show into a tribute to him. And so it's every member had ever played in Devil's Blood. Farida was singing, and they had this beautifully shot footage of Salim on the huge video screens behind, and just everyone was just in absolute floods of tears afterwards.
Mm.
And it was just such a, well, no pun intended, watershed moment.
Yeah.
You know, but so this year they had Molasses, which is Farida's new project with also four members of the Devil's Blood. So it has a bit of the Devil's Blood in it. Musically, it's a bit more jazzy, a bit more, a little bit more freeform and proggy, and it was an amazing thing. But also, you know, last year at Roadburn, it was the year that Caleb Schofield from Caven had just passed away.
Mm.
And they did there was an acoustic tribute to him last year that Steve Brodsky from Caven did with other members. And it was a kind of a secret show, but again, just incredibly emotionally raw experience. And so it wasn't just Caven who played this year as well. It was Old Man Gloom, who Caleb had also been in.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, our man from Converge, Jacob Bannon came on stage, and they played a couple of songs by a band they did together called Zuzubra, that also Caleb had been in. So that was that. Then 2 days, there was a day of Dutch black metal bands at one of the venues. But 2 days beforehand, the singer of Dodecahedron passed away.
Oh right.
So, and it was, you know, he had a wife and a kids, and so it was just really, really hard. And I mean, the show they did for him was amazing. They still played, and the show they did was just absolutely incredible. So there's all these like gigs where it felt like really cathartic. But it also just felt like, you know, everyone's going there had, you know, a lot of people had personal issues that they were dealing with at the time, and this is like the perfect experience for people to, kind of a therapeutic experience for people, just being in this unique environment that Roadburn creates. And there's also just a lot of kind of really incredibly emotional sets. A lot of the artists who were recording, who were being called Death Gospel were there. So A. Williams played, that was just absolutely stunning and
big
beautiful.
Feature in the new issue of Metal Hammer.
A. Williams played, and just like the first debut gig, the whole room was in a hush. Anna von Hauswolf was probably one of my highlights of it. There's a singer called Lingua Ignota who's just absolutely the shows are absolutely traumatizing and incredible and beautiful, and you she plays in a round, so she doesn't play on a stage.
Traumatizing is an amazing word to use for a rock show.
But it is. I mean, if you know her backstory, you understand why. Mm. So she plays in a round, and so she doesn't play on stage. She plays on the floor, and people around her, and it's really Hedian atmosphere she creates. She's a classically trained singer. It's an incredibly clear voice, but the places she goes to it are just this amazing couple of Jolene. But of Jolene.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of the most haunting. There's many covers of Jolene. Yeah, wow. Yeah. But this is by far the most haunting version you've ever heard. And there's like,
I've heard that actually.
There's over snippets of Eileen Wuornos being interviewed by Nick Broomfield as well. But you can see women in the audience like looking up to her and just like almost like on the verge of hyperventilating from the sheer emotional weight of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Highland played, which is always an incredible experience. But him do the new songs as well. Was really amazing. So yeah, just everyone knows. Just took days to kind of come back to earth after.
Yeah, it sounds. I mean, I don't mean it in a negative way. It sounds exhausting.
It's
emotionally
emotionally exhausting. But it's just everyone kind of felt like it's the one thing of the year that just it feels like that's if you're a Roadburn goer and whether it's your first time or your upteenth time, it just feels like this is the crux around which your year turns around.
Wow, amazing. Wow, that sounds like an amazing experience, and it will be back and very quickly sold out.
I think it's the second or third week of April, it's next year. But not only is it the tickets sell out really quickly, but all the accommodation will sell out really quickly. If you're thinking of going, and you should,
don't mess around.
In the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, do it now.
Sure. From High Lung to Arnold Schwarzenegger to Baby Metal. I can't think of a smooth way to do that. Baby Metal are back. Officially back. Not just, they're doing stuff. They are officially back. What the fuck's going on?
They've got a new song coming out called Elevator Girl, out on May the 10th.
That sounds like it should be a busted song or something.
It just doesn't. It sounds like they're singing a love song to a girl that they've seen in the elevator.
Yeah, maybe they are.
Maybe they are, we don't know.
I like to think the backing is elevator music.
Do you imagine?
I actually have a book all about elevator music. It's called Elevator Music.
I have no inclination to read that.
Actually, I'll tell you what, the history of Muzak is one of the most fascinating psychological experiments you'll ever read about.
Really?
Yeah, so there you go. Continue.
Put me in my place. So, when's Elevator Girl coming out then?
May the 10th, and then they're playing Brixton Academy on July the 2nd, supported by Amaranth and Sleep Token.
Really?
Yes.
July 2nd, late summer, no, midsummer vibe. Interesting. And officially a duo now, as I think we discussed recently.
Yeah, and the press shots are showing two girls anyway, so they haven't said officially it's a duo, not a trio, but it looks like it is.
Well, That's that then. Interesting. I'm genuinely surprised they haven't chosen to introduce a new member. Or maybe they will still, but it just seems like I can't believe I'm saying this, but you know when you think about Slipknot, when Slipknot lost members, they introduced new ones, it becomes a big thing, new mask, new identity, new story around the band. I kind of think Baby Metal have that, you know. Their fans will go nuts for a new member. Surely it's got to happen at some point.
But
I'm looking at you, Al. I just assume you're a Baby Metal person.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know any more than you.
Yeah, but I think, especially when it's down to two or three members, the difference between two and three changes the dynamics so much.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And like in a 3-year gang, two, it's the relationship between the two of them.
Mm.
And so it clearly doesn't seem like they're going to bring in another member. So I think on some fundamental level it is going to alter what Baby Metal are.
Interesting.
We shall see.
Might make it a kind of a bit more of an intimate thing. I don't know. Like I said, it's about the relationship between two artists rather than three as a gang.
Well, I thought before the whole Yui thing happened, I thought they were spotlighting Sue Metal a lot more. She seemed to be sort of breaking out of the dance routines more, having her own kind of solo spots more. I thought she was going to sort of turn into a, you know, more of a featured artist and maybe have a solo record and that kind of thing. But a member leaving does completely change that, because I can't see that she'd be doing she'd be sort of breaking away from a duo, because there's no point to that then, is there? It's one person and one person. It's a different dynamic. Yeah, so don't know.
We'll see.
What do you think Baby Metal fans, which I know it's quite a broad church actually, but what do you think they'd make of Sleep Token? That's a really interesting booking for Brixton Academy as well.
Yeah, I mean, Sleep Token, in case you don't know who they are, they're a group of masked individuals who perform fairly ambient music that usually has sort of a breakout rockier bit at the end of each song. So I've seen them before, but in a small, intimate setting, not on the stage at Brixton Academy. So it's going to be super interesting to see how they cope with that massive stage and massive venue. And also just, yeah, like you said, how people respond. They've kind of got, I'm going to call it a gimmick of the masks thing going on.
Yeah.
But the music is not upbeat, energetic Baby Metal music. It's a lot different to that. So yeah, that'll be quite weird, won't it?
Yeah, that will be weird. And speaking of weird, that was smoother. Rammstein are teasing more new music. Head over to metalhammer.com to hear some snippets. I think they put out a video trailer as well, which you seem to spot out. Looks like it's got the new album art on it.
They've shared the album artwork. It's a match stick on a white background, seems to be. So I guess quite simple.
Lit, unlit, to be lit.
Representing burned Rammstein out. And fire. Not burned out.
No.
That makes me sad.
Well, I'm asking, what kind of match is it? I can't remember.
Oh, I think it's like a... I thought you were...
These details are important. Symbolism.
It's an unlit match.
Probably not a safety match.
A new match.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, the album, which is self-titled, coming May 17th, and that big European tour is on the way as well, featuring A Little Old Stop at Milton Keynes Football Stadium. So, yeah.
We will be there.
And the gimmicks keep coming this week. Corey Taylor, I don't know why I'm doing all the news, I'm just can't stop
on.
Me now. Corey Taylor is teasing a new Slipknot mask, which is cool. I kind of feel like Corey's is always the one people are most invested in, because obviously it's Corey, he's the front man, the loudmouth, but I feel like his tends to undergo the most drastic evolutions.
Really? I kind of think his is one of the most straightforward masks.
Do you reckon?
I think he's gone some very different ones. Like, that kind of rocketeer mask he had was very
unique. What's a rocketeer
the
mask?
The one with the circle around the eye.
Yeah, the circle and the oval. That was that's actually my favourite mask he did.
Mine as well. All hope is gone here.
I like that one as well.
Because I remember when he did that, weird. That was a big departure. Yeah. And it felt like, what the fuck is that? And at first I didn't really like it, but I actually think it's the most unsettling out
it's
of all.
It's got such a blank face. Yeah, what do you mean by rocketeer?
So, it reminds me of two kind of different comics. One, The Rocketeer. which is like, you know,
we're
kind of like,
this what now?
Yeah, there's kind of like Rocketeer. Sort of golden or silver age character, and who had this kind of like pill shaped kind of metal mask. I could be completely wrong, but that's...
Oh, yeah, I recognise him.
Yeah.
Show him to us.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I mean, okay, he has a fin on the mask, but that kind of like metal mask. But also,
I don't really recognise that actually. This guy.
I don't recognise that.
See, play along at home. Google The Rocketeer if you don't know what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
but I also like I like all those kind of like robots with metal round metal heads as well. And also reminds me of a comic called Love and Rockets.
Oh, I know Love and Rockets. Which is one,
and Gilbert Hernandez, yeah, and it's probably one of the greatest comics of all time. And reminds me of like with Gilbert Hernandez, he does all the stuff set in south of the Tex-Mex border, and there's all these ancient stone deities, and the mask reminds me of all those deities in this, like...
Well, Corey's a massive comics geek, so it would surprise me one of those is
I've no doubt that... because they all have these kind of asymmetric eyes, like one's a circle, one's an oval. And so, yeah, just reminds me of all those things. And,
that's awesome. I wasn't keen on the last Corey mask. He just kind of looked like a grumpy old man, and the whole jaw thing coming off didn't really work, did it?
It kind of reminds me... No,
like the most recent one, because like it was like fleshy, and then he'd rip off the top of it, and it was more like kind of it looked like a bogey underneath, a really angry bogey.
Oh. Actually, the mask we were just talking about, it also reminds me of the Princess Mononoke forest spirits. You know, just like their faces with the round eyes and the round mouths, and they make those clicking noises.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's something a bit Spirited Away about mask, like one of the creatures in Spirited Away or something.
Definitely the Princess Mononoke one is what it reminds me of. It's, weird, blank, but
What did Corey Taylor's 2008 mask remind you of? Let us know now. Facebook.com/MetalHammerReaders. So yeah, new Slipknot mask. I mean, I'm still like, I fall for a hook, line, and sinker. I get so excited about new Slipknot, like new Slipknot everything, new music, new boiler suits, new masks, new videos, new stage show. Like, I fully buy and proudly buy into the Slipknot ethos.
They're quite high-minded for this one, though. It's meant to have been designed by Tom Savini.
Yeah, Tom Savini did it, didn't he? I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
So I've got, like, really high hopes. And
yeah, that'd be awesome. Just... horror special effects legend. Yeah. And Guncock in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
If you get that reference.
Imagine Del Toro did their masks. Alejandro Del Toro. How amazing would that
be? Eyes everywhere.
Weird castles on their heads.
That should be awesome. So yeah, hopefully it's going to be a bold new era for Slipknot. We're very excited about it. That album's in July or something, isn't it?
Probably.
Or August?
They did release the date, which we spoke about the podcast.
Late summer, yeah.
Yeah.
What a big year for metal this is. Unbelievable. Exciting times. And as I'm doing all the news, apparently, Sabaton have a new song out / video out. Did everyone watch it?
Yeah.
Well done. Did your homework. New video called Bismarck comes from the Great War album. They decided to do the big war, World War One, which is the concept for the new record. Sabaton, of course, all their records are around war, heroic battles. Infamous campaigns and all that from history, and they've gone for the big one. So the Great War is coming out on July 19th via the always awesome Nuclear Blast, and they've done a video about the Bismarck, which is, hands up, we want to see you about the Bismarck and what it was and could remember their history classes from before having to look it up.
No idea.
I'd known it was a ship, that was as far as I would have.
Yeah. Oh,
I knew, yeah.
The sinking of the Bismarck.
I know it's the name of a ship, and that's kind of...
Yeah,
all
the phrase,
remember.
The sinking of the Bismarck, is burned into my brain.
Yeah, that was the same. Sabaton have got a new video out about the Bismarck, which was a massive warship put out by the Germans in the Great War. Shit! I looked it up yesterday and I forgot it again.
Which, according to the video, only has one occupant.
My GCSE history teacher. Absolutely.
The captain. Yeah, there's like, they sink the ship and there's like one person.
Man. Yeah, I looked this up yesterday. My history teacher would be absolutely screwing at me for that.
And also, I meant to look it up on Sabaton's own history channel because I think they've got a video about the Bismarck up there, but I hadn't got around to it, so... remember when people were doing all those things online where it was a play?
Anyway, I said earlier it's World War One. It's fucking World War Two. What are we talking about? Yeah. Obviously, it's a giant battle. Like, sorry, ignore me. Fucked it.
Do you remember there was a time when people were
the not so great war?
Yeah, but the Great War is what people call World War One, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why that threw me. So it's called the Great War, but it's obviously about at least partly World War Two, possibly others. Yeah, go on now.
Remember that time where everyone was doing blow-by-blows of videos online and kind of breaking them all down?
Yes.
Because when I watched those, which is about 6 minutes, I really thought it could do with one of those. You're like, oh, here's a giant ship. Sabaton are playing on a giant ship. He's still wearing his vest. Yeah. Oh no, now something
you
else
need
is happening.
To do this. Record it. We'll throw it out there.
I feel like there's definitely, like, obviously people do reaction videos online, but I felt like it needed like a breakdown.
Yeah, I think the video raises a lot more questions than it answers.
It does raise some questions.
Like, why is there only one occupant? Who is it? Who just said, yeah, come on, he swims away. He swims away, and then it's like, yeah, come on board. Yeah, you know, we just sank your ship. There's no one in there. But also, Sabaton themselves. At one point, they're indoors in like some kind of disco hall.
No, I thought they were indoors with that bit, but then they sort of zoomed out and it was dark, and they were still
on the ship.
Yeah, because it was light on the ship, and then it was dark on the ship. Because I thought they were in a different room as well, but it just changed to night. I think it just got dark while they're playing the song. It suddenly, within 6 minutes, went from day to night.
Yeah, because I was wondering about, you know, just the general logistics about how they get from indoors on one ship to outdoors on another, which is a tugboat.
No, it was outside the entire time, but it just changed very quickly from day to night. That's what happened.
Because that happens all the time at war.
Well, it definitely happens.
It's a bit Plan 9 from Outer Space. We go from one shot and it's daytime, and then you pan around and it's suddenly nighttime.
I also just love, like I said, how he was wearing his like metallic battle vest, and they're all just like playing all their instruments. No concern for safety, no life nothing like that.
Right, no. I got to the bottom of my confusion here. So Bismarck is a standalone single, which is why it's a World War II subject matter.
Right.
And it's and they've obviously teamed up with World of Warships, who are a very big video game company who do stuff about warships, to make the video. So it's a standoff thing, because apparently loads of their fans wanted them to do something on Bismarck, because it's such a massive and well-known part of the other Great War, but not the main Great War that they're writing about. So the single standalone and the Great War, the album, is going to be about World War One, and that's out July 19th.
Glad we got that sorted out.
I am, because I thought I was losing my mind for a second then. Fuck me. Anyway, I think the song's really good.
it sounds like the reason I thought about disco, because like, it sounds like it just should be a disco song.
You love disco.
I do, but I think that song would be greatly improved with a disco backing. it would fit totally.
It's really.
It's like mate, would it?
Yeah, like a disco power ballad type
like
of thing.
Hear it.
You listen to Turbo too
it's
much.
A little bit,
yeah.
It's a little bit YMCA almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
They've always had that about them, though, haven't they, Sabaton?
Yeah.
That kind of like, da-da-da-da-da, like with the dance music.
Yeah, I don't think the music really gets across the fear and the shit in your breeches of war very much.
It's more celebrating the steel construction of the ship, isn't it? They sort of call it a steel beast or something, which is pretty metal.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, the end of the video, it says, war has no nation, which is a famous quote from somebody that I can't remember who.
Good one.
I'm doing great today. So, you know, I guess they're just trying to... I think when Sabaton cover these things, they present them just as they were, you know.
Yeah, they don't take sides, do they?
But that is interesting that they basically decided they spent all this time putting together a concept album about one particular era and war, and then they've kind of swerved it a bit and just put out a totally unrelated single.
I guess it's because
a couple of months before.
I guess it's because of their, you know, they got World of Warships involved.
Yeah, fair
enough.
Is
this going to be on the album?
I don't think it is. No. It says in a little bit of research I just very hastily did. It said standalone single.
Yeah.
Maybe it will appear on like a bonus version or whatever. We live in a world of Spotify now. Who cares? You can make your own playlist. But yeah, I think it's good. It's a slightly stompier, kind of slightly slower version of the kind of standard Sabaton template. But I'm excited for a new Sabaton album, man. They're a great band. Absolutely fucking massive. And I don't think a lot of people realise how big this band actually are. Just take a quick look at their streaming numbers and compare it to a lot of other modern metal bands, and you'll realise just how big Sabaton are. And they take their subject matter really seriously. They've got their own history channel now, and they've got their, you know, they've got people that are actually, if you read through all the YouTube comments on the video and stuff, they've actually got people genuinely wanting to learn about all this stuff and see Sabaton give it the power metal treatment.
Perhaps the next on one off.
Yeah, well, maybe not. maybe so, I meant to say. But yeah, maybe.
There's a parallel, obviously.
I kind of see them on the same level, to be honest. Like,
I actually think Sabaton are bigger than Amon Amarth in quite a lot of parts of Europe now, to be honest.
I think they probably are.
Kind of similar, like, they both have a really strong concept. They're both writing quite straight-ahead metal, and they both have a show. Like, there's a lot of similarities between them.
Definitely. And they both have that nailed in... This band could steal the festival because they're going to be brilliant.
I mean, they're both kind of like reliable. I mean, you know, you don't expect big left field turns from either of them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know.
No.
I love AC/DC for that way, and Motorhead for that way reason.
Yeah, totally. No, very excited for the new Sabaton. So to summarise, new album out in July, new single out now, unrelated to the album. Just enjoy it all.
Yeah, videos.
Or don't. It's your choice.
Yeah, like, it's funny because the video and the production values are very cinematic, but they obviously couldn't afford any cast.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. That's why. Oh, God.
Too much fire and...
Maybe they'll put it on the sequel.
Well, yeah, do you know what, Jonathan? The main character was the ship itself.
And that went down. I cried for the ship, not for the human being.
Yeah, that's...
Or the human being.
That was a real tragedy. So yeah, go check it out right now. Sabaton, definitely, I think definitely in that same vein as Amon Amarth of being a band that maybe we've taken for granted, but maybe we shouldn't do, because I think they're going to be doing some big things this year. So watch out for that. Shall we take some questions from our readers? Ben on the Metal Hammer readers Facebook page seems to be a bit psychic and seemed to know you were coming in to take your interview because he's directed a question at you.
Right, yeah, so he says, are you ever too old for Easter eggs? That's not the part of the question I've directed at me particularly. And did you have any over Easter? I choose to believe that Jonathan Salzer had 100% black chocolate one with Satellite logo on the packet.
Did you?
No. But
did you have any?
No. But oh, I do. I know. But I do. There should be a Baphomet one. Yeah. On the throne.
What's the closest? 100% like cocoa.
I think I can go up to about 75-80% because I can't actually really eat milk chocolate because it's too sweet. It just makes me feel sick.
Obviously,
from a man that likes licorice, this does not surprise me.
Yeah, the saltier the licorice, the better, basically.
So, you absolute pig.
But the best, but the best Easter egg I ever did have was a South Park one, and inside were loads. I think it was kind of based around Kenny. And inside Kenny were loads of jelly rats.
I love that.
The zombie episode when they were pink eye.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
That
yeah.
one, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, that's classic.
Yeah, I've never seen that Easter egg ever again. Just I saw it 1 year and I thought, right, that's it. I'm having that.
Amazing.
Did you get any eggs?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
How many eggs?
I asked my family not to get me too many because I was trying to be healthy, and I still ended up with like 4. So I don't know what happened.
That's good.
But I got a big Lindor egg, which I'm going to save. And 2 smaller ones, which I'm probably not going to save as for very long because I've got no willpower whatsoever. What about you guys? Eggs?
I got a lint rabbit.
Good.
Oh,
a classic.
Yeah, that's nice.
I was a big fan of the Kinder eggs.
I don't like those. I find them too sweet.
Get chocolate and toy though.
Yeah, but it was
so much bad for your butt.
I'll have the toy and then I don't like.
Yeah.
Chocolate. Oh. No.
Behave.
But the toys are so disappointing now compared to what they used to be. Like it's just 2 parts you put together now. Where it used to be like much more different parts you had to put together.
They're like banned in America, aren't they?
Choking hazard, you mean?
Yeah, no. I'm sure,
yeah.
I'm sure
of all the things for America to finally get back.
What we would do, but you know that little sort of yellow egg inside which the toy was in.
Yeah.
We used to take the toy out, fill it with water, and use them as water bombs.
Of course you did.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I didn't get any eggs last year, which was really disappointing. So this year I sort of made a bit of a fuss in the lead up to Easter that I didn't have any last year.
Your life's been better this time.
I ended up with 3. I got a Button's egg, a Twirl egg, and a Thornton's one with nuts built into it.
Built in?
Yeah.
Bolted on.
It's quite grown up, because when I was a child I would not have wanted nuts anywhere near my chocolate.
I just always want the children's ones anyway. I just want the like cream egg ones or the like dairy milk ones. I don't want the grown up ones. I've been given grown up ones. I'm like, oh, it's not that nice.
I'll have it all. I love it.
I just want the.
Bring it all on. Remember those like you used to get those like cake decorations that look like silver ball bearings?
Imagine
if you do that as studs, you get the most metal egg ever.
That look awesome. We are selling like chocolate companies' ideas here. Someone should be paying us for this shit. Come on. The moral of the story is, now of course you're not too old for Easter eggs. What an absurd idea. It's chocolate.
I hate it when people think you are too old and don't give you any. That makes me sad.
No, come on. That's
very
cool.
Good that we didn't get anyone.
My parents don't give me Easter eggs anymore, which makes me sad because that means I'm an adult now and can't have chocolate.
That's awful. Where did you get your other Easter eggs from then?
So my niece and nephew got me one. From their parents, and my cousin gave me one a couple of weeks ago just randomly for no reason. She just came to stay.
That's nice.
And my other half gave me the nut one.
Yay, hooray for Easter. Hail Satan. Zach Wells asks, have any of you ever witnessed Sun, as in Sun ... live? If so, what do you reckon? I haven't.
Many times.
I'm too scared. I actually haven't, sort of almost deliberately, because...
I'm not scared, it's just not...
I'll tell you why you shouldn't in a minute, but I want to hear what your experience was, Alice.
It was an experience. I think that's pretty much summed up. It's like, I would recommend people going at some point in their lifetime to witness this kind of, like, bizarre, atmospheric, like, show.
guess.
Yeah, but what physical effect did it have on you?
Oh, it was... I don't even remember. I just felt quite overwhelmed. I had to leave, like, at some point in the middle. I was like, this is too much now, because it's so, like... Your ears feel weird. It's not like a normal, like, metal gig when you're just like, ow, my ears are ringing. It's kind of just like... I can't explain it.
Yeah.
It's just almost like you've got this, like, weird shadow around you, like this cloud of noise.
Yeah, because the sound doesn't... Because it's so bass, so much bass and drone,
yeah.
The sound doesn't go in through your ears. It comes up through your feet,
yeah,
and into your chest cavities and makes all your hair stand on end.
That's why I don't want to go.
Yeah, well, so I've seen it many times, but the other thing is, like, they don't always have a Tilak Siha on vocals. When they do, he just has some of the most amazing get-ups ever. Like, some of them are really actually quite... Just, I don't remember if this is May... No, it was with Sané. Some of his get-ups are, like, really disturbing, where he has, like, this... He has obviously has a cowed hood, but there's, like... It's like almost like Wicker Man sticks coming out of his sleeves and out of his face, and there's another thing where suit's made of like broken or shards of glass, and he puts light over it so it refracts the glass in all different kind of ways.
I like the sound of that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really just like, it's almost like physics, it's like something out of a Ben Wheatley movie or something, and it's just, yeah, it's so visually it's really incredible, especially when you have this whole banks of like Mark Stacks behind as well. Mm-hmm. Too, like, visually it's amazing, and then there's all the dry ice that kind of fills the entire room. There's a physical effect of what it does to you as well. And yeah, I once saw them play at the Corsica Studios in Elephant and Castle. They were doing the Grim Rogue demo, so it was just the early stuff, and I didn't wear earplugs and I could barely walk back.
Oh, that sounds horrible. I had to get the earplugs from behind the bar when they came on. I was like, shit, I need those. And but there was one bit when I saw them, there was like a space in front of us, and we're like, what's this guy doing? And then it's just a guy like really like raving in the middle.
Was it Jonathan?
it was bizarre. It was the most bizarre thing ever, because it's really slow and droney, and he's there like, oh yeah, as if he was at a rave or something. Like, that must be too many drugs. But
see,
like, what kind of drugs are you taking to get that from this?
The first time I played London, I had a friend who went and he just lay down on the floor at the Underworld.
None of this makes me want to go see him, to be honest. I appreciate it's something that needs to be experienced.
Yeah, your DNA will be like reconfigured by the end of it.
I honestly think I would die. Like, I just think it would be like, I just don't think I could cope with it.
I mean, the whole point is that it's like overwhelming. Like, there's no kind of beat to it. There's no like, there's no like human beat that you can go, right, this is one bit, this is the next bit. So
I don't like unpleasant physical sensations, like, you know, pirate ships at theme parks. Or Zorbs, where you like lose your stomach and just feel like crap.
Yeah.
What's a Zorb?
A ball that you get.
Oh, yeah.
In.
Oh, those.
It's not like
yeah,
that. I find it strangely blissful, but there you go.
Someone do another question.
Okay.
Before we get lost in the
Jamie
malaise.
Phillips asks, Turbo by Judas Priest is underrated. Fact or fiction?
I have to admit, I hadn't listened to Turbo for years. I don't think I probably listened to it since I first got into Judas Priest, when I did what I think most people do, where you get into Judas Priest, find out they've got this amazing massive back catalogue and just steam through it all over, you know, a few weeks or months or whatever. So I went back to it off the back of this, and I guess I could just say it's very of its time.
Yeah.
We did a feature on it very recently, actually, or maybe about a year ago, which you can read online.
I think you can.
You can.
On the Metal Hammer site.
Yeah,
just to clarify. Anywhere online.
Like all these
British, yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like all these British bands, I had this moment, like Def Leppard had it too, where they kind of really gunned for the US audience. And this is one of those. But it kind of ruined Def Leppard. But this is, even though I think it's not underrated, I think it's a great album. And it's really, really patchy. It's one of the best selling records.
It is, yeah. It is.
So, I mean, there's bits at the beginning that sound very kind of almost like a West Coast rock, like a West Coast rock band. You can hear lots of this kind of ZZ Top stomp in it.
Yeah, especially
that
like when they were on the what album's Velcro Fly on, like that era.
Yeah.
I mean, I did some track by track.
Looks a bit like there's one good
power ballad, but it would have been better if Pat Benatar had been singing it. And was it Parental Guidance? Is a terrible song.
Yeah, that's basically sounds like a Van Halen B-side.
I just don't know what they're doing with it. It's just, yeah,
it was, and that was the one they wrote about Tipper Gore as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, anything that starts off with Turbo Killer can't be too bad.
It's got Turbo Lover on it, which is an all-time great.
And it's got one, two or three, and I quite like the first two or three tracks. Just because they're kind of almost like pure libido, but I actually think
the last two tracks are the best two. Well, not including Turbo Lover, Hot for Love.
I really love Hot for Love.
I think Reckless. I don't know which is on the original, which was on the re-release, but yeah, they're both more kind of classic Priest. Yeah, I think if you've never listened to that album before, it's an interesting little window into, like you said, really what a lot of bands are doing at the time. Mm. Lots of synth, very clean. Big cheesy rock songs, but I would say it's rated just about right.
I don't think history. It's funny because you think they'd be great with all that stuff, that West Coast stuff and the blues stuff, and a power ballad. But I don't think they're really playing to their strengths on that album.
No, definitely not.
Read the feature.
Read the feature. Because the story around it is very, very, very interesting and fraught with fraughtness.
Fraught with fraughtness.
Someone else do a question.
So I've got to read the one that you can't pronounce. At Nuatet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's close enough.
Probably off Twitter.
Do you think Ghost could headline Download in 2020?
That's next year, isn't it?
It is. I see you're on it today. could Ghost headline Download in 2020?
I think they could.
Probably.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I think Ghost could headline anywhere.
Still not headlined an arena in the UK.
No, but I think in the UK we're very slow to promote bands.
I feel more like they could be sub-headliner, and then 2021, 2022 would be headliner. I think they could do it. I'm not saying they couldn't do it. I think they'd be amazing at it. But in terms of like the reality of whether it would happen, I don't know.
I've probably booked them to headline the second stage.
Yeah, I can see them definitely headline.
Slayer are doing that this year, so it's not a small position at all. And I think it'll be the right time of day / night. And I think if you book Ghost to headline now, there'll be so much pressure on them. And I think you'd probably be better off putting them on at a point where they could almost steal the weekend. Because if Ghost headline, if you put Ghost headline Download, like just by default, one of the other headliners is going to be fucking massive because it's got to be because they've got a modern headliner on one of the other days. So you're talking about a Metallica or I don't know, like AC/DC sized headliner, something massive, and I can't see people coming away from a weekend like that saying Ghost were the best thing there. Whereas if you tuck them away a little bit. On the second stage, I think they could. Ghost still haven't had that outdoor big festival set where it's made everyone go, this band are ready to headline, you know? I think you need that. They did Bloodstock, which was great, but I still think they need to do it in front of a wider audience, in my opinion.
Do you think it's based on them, or do you think it's based on how much they can scale up their production?
I just think they could probably do with bringing their current show over here a bit more. They've only done that, what's it called? Royal Albert Hall show so far, haven't they? This album.
They headlined the Forum.
Yeah.
But that was on the last album. Sorry.
Yeah, but that was when everyone kind of realised, oh my God, this is the next generation of headlines.
Yeah, totally. Bands. But to put that into context, because Jira headlined that same arena venue in that same few months. And you wouldn't put Jira headline in Download right now. So I still don't think Ghost haven't really done enough to merit it. Hopefully they'll do an arena run or something at some point on this album cycle, and that will kind of give everyone a better idea of where they're at. In terms of how good they are and where they're at, you know, artistically, then fuck yeah, I'd love to see it. But I'd worry that it could be a bit early for that, personally.
Well,
the last word on the matter, clearly.
Yeah, I'd invite someone else to have one, but clearly I'm just so bloody right. Someone else do a question.
What are some metal songs that genuinely make you smile or laugh? Asks Joe.
Fleischer, surely.
That's Fairies Wear Boots, because apparently that makes everyone laugh.
It's one of my favourite Sabbath songs.
It's a great song.
Yeah, that's a good song.
It's one of the most ridiculous hooks ever.
Yeah.
They have some great lyrics though.
Yeah.
What makes you smile that's heavy?
Me?
Hey, well, anyone, there's four of us.
Like Dream Evil, the Book of Heavy Metal.
Yeah, that makes me laugh. That does make me laugh.
Definitely makes me laugh, that song.
Why are you making a face?
Because I'm just so happy at the thought of it.
That sounded sarcastic.
Not at all.
It's a great song.
Yeah, it's a banger.
In the Book of Heavy Metal.
I'm feeling a lot of ours might be in the same thing here. I've put down Finn Troll.
Yeah.
I've put down Sabaton. You know, power metal and folk metal is definitely in that.
What about Raise Your Phallus to the Sky and You Will Never Die?
Powerwolf. Yes.
Resurrection by Erection.
A good choice.
I think I do like some of that ridiculous Viking stuff. Like I love everything. I think 2SS Live make me laugh because they're so funny and so self-aware. I do love a few good drinking songs. Beer by Kopakani and Trollhammer.
Classic.
Yeah. And then the next one they did like Bring Me Cups of Beer, which is like it's not quite as good. It's not to the point.
Yeah.
But didn't they put an album out?
He's like, diluted the message.
Just like different versions of beer. But if you want a band that makes you happy like that, the best band of all for me is.
Stop slapping the table.
Sorry, Trollfest. Trollfest.
Oh, Trollfest! You love those guys.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's just it's so odd, and they've got this whole kind of Balkan thing, and just the energy, and they're all actually black metal musicians, so they're amazing musicians, but they're just the most madcap of the lot. It's like, yeah, some kind of crazy Rabina Crazy Hanna-Barbera version of Viking.
Love that.
Or Looney Tunes, I should say, not Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. And I got Devin Townsend stuff for happiness as well. Things like Lucky Animals, that's a good song. It's really bouncy.
Yeah, I remember that song.
Yeah.
Also stuff like Super Crush, but that's sort of like more on the intense emotional end of happy rather than just straight up happy.
Sure.
It's weird like going to a Devin Townsend gig and there's loads of metalheads there and he starts off by playing Venga Boys and everyone's just like, yeah! And just people going out with just this glee just plastered on their faces that we won't be able to scrape off for about a week.
I'm going to see him tonight.
Yeah, he's playing tonight. Yeah, it's an acoustic show, so I don't know if he's going to start with Venga Boys.
Review that next week.
We'll see.
Acoustic Venga Boys, I'll go for that. Alice, metal that makes you toast happy?
I've just put down like glam metal stuff, like Def Leppard and Steel Panther. Sure.
Yeah. Steel Panther, yes.
Lyrics are so great.
What song?
I don't know, I haven't listened to them in ages.
Chime.
Actually.
Is it Asian
Hooker? Oh no. You had to go for the PC one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing PC about them. But it's funny that's the one that has the but here's the thing like with them and Tourist, like they're kind of piss takes. But if you're going to piss take something, you have to know it actually better than the people who do it as a piss take. Steel Panther write better songs than most sleeves rock bands.
Well,
yeah,
I back that up.
Community Property.
Yeah, good wholesome track as well. That is a classic album, to be honest. I've got a couple of those. I've got Andrew WK as well.
Oh,
makes me so happy.
That's such a good choice.
So happy. She is beautiful. Oh my god.
What's the big song again?
Party Hard,
yeah.
Party Hard, or you could have had Party Till You Puke, or the more direct one I like, Party, Party, Party.
Yeah,
I can I also just say that last album where it sounds like a massive musical? I feel like there was a lot of noise.
Feels like it's with David Bowie.
Yeah, I love that song. I feel like there was a lot of noise around when it came out because people sort of see him as this novelty and, like, you know, he was sort of everywhere, but then people don't really talk about him now. That record has just faded away, but it was really fun and, like, yeah. Good, it's good, uplifting, you're not alone, sort of a record.
He still gives advice though, doesn't he, on like online?
Yeah, his advice columns are actually pretty amazing.
Well, I don't know what he's doing right now, I'll be honest. He did a lot of advice columns for, I think it's the Village Voice or something, but
yeah, there's no Village Voice anymore.
I know he's like on Twitter and stuff, but I don't know.
He's just pretending out, isn't he? Probably chilling out.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
He's got a family, hasn't he?
Don't know.
Oh.
He's married.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I genuinely don't know. I'm not digging for gossip on fucking Andrew WK.
He's a mysterious man.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, he's one of them. All right. Well, in that case, he probably does have something going on that he'd rather turn some time off rather than making music journalists happy, I assume. Bryce Brown asks, what is the most embarrassing moment metal has ever had?
Lols.
I'm trying to think of, I know it's like small embarrassments that kill people's careers.
Yeah.
Like, I remember like the first metal band I ever interviewed was Zentrix.
Oh yeah.
Who are back now. And they, because it's taken them like 30 years, I guess, to overcome their version, their Ghostbusters single.
They did Ghostbusters.
They did a single. Yeah,
I didn't know this. That's
Yeah, they covered Ghostbusters with 12 inch. I still got it, and it just completely destroyed their career.
What? Really?
Yeah, no one ever took him seriously ever again. I mean,
wow.
What?
Yeah,
I've never heard this.
That's mental.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Why would that destroy their career?
Yeah. Why?
Imagine they were kind of seen as like the English. I don't know that aren't. They sound a lot like Metallica. They're supposed to be a serious band, and. It was the ages. It was a different time, Merlin.
Yeah. Having people do stupid covers now.
Yeah. Yeah, it never kind of lived it down.
If they did that now, that would become their biggest single on Spotify and it would give them a new lease of life.
I'd be interested to see if they play it live, yeah. But,
wow. I'm going to have to go listen to that. Any other shouts out? I've put down the Osbournes.
Oh.
Because it basically made Ozzy.
Finally, no.
Which
it was
I.
It's a figure of fun, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it made. I mean, I've watched The Osbournes and I still think it was a hilarious TV show, so I'm being a hypocrite. But it did basically turn Ozzy into a reality TV laughing stock.
Yeah.
From being the guy that tore the heads off bats and genuinely scared the mainstream and stuff. And he's always been Ozzy. It's nothing on what Ozzy's done. Ozzy's always been Ozzy. But it definitely repositioned him, and it was weird to see. You know, someone who is known as the Prince of Darkness shuffling about complaining about dog shit.
It's one of the first times we'd actually seen sort of an unvarnished portrait of a celebrity.
Yeah.
I say unvarnished, obviously it was edited to show a certain narrative, but at that time, social media wasn't as prevalent and we didn't have people kind of putting everything out there online.
Yeah,
so
it changed the world.
We were still watching TV at that point and getting information that way, and it's the first time somebody had kind of gone, this is my actual life.
Well, funnily enough, I my girlfriend really likes keeping up with the Kardashians, so I've watched a little bit more of that than I have in my previous 30 years on
Then you should.
But there was an old episode on TV the other day, and it was one of the first seasons, and I couldn't help but notice that the font they used for the title logo was really similar, if not the exact same one that they used for the Osbournes.
That's interesting.
Which just shows you how it was moulded in the same... in the exact same vein, which is crazy to think that.
Yeah.
And now that's the one we live in, reality TV is huge. And as I say,
it's like
I watched
the Jetsons, actually, that logo, isn't it? It's kind of sort of 60s space age.
The Osbournes one, yeah. I mean, you know, Ozzy wouldn't have a career without Sharon, and I do think that probably did keep him relevant at a point where he might not have been as public and seen and, you know, cared about, so I guess it's a bit of a mixed bag. But in terms of, I'm trying to think of like stuff that basically put metal on a platform and reduced it to a bit of a joke, which I think the Osbournes did at that point.
Would you say
but
the
I
same?
Watched it, so I've actually got the DVD box set somewhere.
Would you say the same about Some Kind of Monster?
Definitely, yeah. But I think that's an amazing watch.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's a genuinely incredible show.
It would
be great
if it
wasn't a band that I cared about. I'd still watch it, you know, because it's just amazing.
It's those raw emotional responses, isn't it, that grown adults come out with, where you're just like, whoa.
Grown American adults, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, Metallica do tend to come to mind for this stuff because they've always put themselves out there in a way that bands rarely have.
Yeah.
You know, they've never been afraid to basically risk themselves getting laughed out, taking the piss out of. You know, they did the thing with Lou Reed, of course. Saint Anger and Some Kind of Monster and the movie. You know, you have to kind of just give them credit for putting themselves out there in the first place, because
I've got a very trivial one. Thomas Holopainen doing an album about Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
If people think of metal and they think the metal is stupid, that's not going to do us any favours, is it?
Yeah.
Have there been other like metal people who've done ill-advised Christmas songs, or I know like Billy Idol did a Christmas album. I'm sure there must be other
Oh god, yeah, there must
Twisted
be
Sisters Christmas album.
Yeah, but that would be
people
amazing.
People like that though. Yeah,
it's Twisted Sister. They can do no wrong.
I mean, as much as I will obviously fight to the death to defend its legacy, a lot of people would say new metal because that was the biggest metal has ever been in
terms of
breaking into the mainstream. And I could see why some sections of the metal world might look at Fred Durst and say that's a bit embarrassing. There's a whole generation of people that think when they think of metal, the first thing they think of is Fred Durst grabbing his crotch.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm a Limp Bizkit. I'm not a Limp Bizkit apologist. Defender. So.
Yeah. All those crabcore bands as well too.
Pretty embarrassing.
They all kind of influenced a lot of the sort of like bands coming out at that time though, and like that sort of like went into death, like the deathcore bands, and a lot of people sort of borrowed from.
I think
Caleb came out with Beartooth, so it wasn't all bad.
No, not at all.
Well, I thought, like, you know, bands like, I mean, I liked Korn because they had a really innovative rhythm section, like really unusual rhythm section.
Korn were on the front of Terrorizer magazine. I always point that out.
Yeah, I think before my time at Terrorizer, it was the first magazine put Slipknot on the cover.
Mm.
So yeah, it was. People forget that. You know, it took over every aspect. You know, the first magazine I wrote for, Melody Maker, it's an indie magazine, and that, in its dying days, it decided it was going to become a new metal magazine. You know, Well, I wouldn't say it was embarrassing, it was just of its time. It's more like how big new metal had become that it was the wave.
Fair.
I find some symphonic a bit embarrassing.
Oh yeah,
symphonic metal,
some of it, yeah.
You're more of a defender for that side of the scene than most though, I would say.
What's the song that I really don't like?
Sounds like a symphonic metal band,
no, I think the Nightwish one about the daffodil shedding a tear. Which is that one?
I can't remember. I think that's off Endless Forms Most Beautiful.
That's not my favourite song in the world.
There's just those loads of those symphonic bands with singers who can't actually sing, like as much as I never really liked Nightwish that much. Either like sometimes, but I didn't like the Tarja era. If you put her against any other singer, you'll notice the huge gulf of talent between her and virtually almost everyone else. There's like lots of wannabe bands who try and sing operatic, but they don't have the technique.
Mm. Well, I think that can go for a lot of things. You know, anyone that tries to imitate Halford and Dickinson has got to be good.
Yeah,
you know, there's loads of heavy metal bands with high pitched singers where it's just a bit like, not actually good though, are you? So yeah. Let's say something good about metal. I feel bad now. I just slacked it off for 10 minutes.
Because you know, all those bands as well have like done cool things.
Yeah.
It's just the odd moment that I don't like. But
I know what will make you feel good about metal. Go and pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer with a motherfucking moth on the cover with Johan Hegg sat on a throne with a giant hammer in his hand. That'll make you feel good about metal because it's awesome. And we love it. And we'll be back next week to talk about it some more. Ed will be reviewing Devin Townsend. Being all acoustic, that'll be fun.
Can we have some more posy questions as well?
Yeah. Or just questions. I think the questions from our readers are pretty good.
I know, they got us thinking.
It's like you said, now I feel a bit sad.
No, it's fine. Go listen to a Monomath and pick up the new issue now.
What else is in it?
Loads of stuff. Marilyn Manson versus Courtney Love. Honestly, that feature is absolutely nuts. They just don't make tours like that anymore. Possessed, Death Gospel, Employed to Serve, and The Prodigy, which is one of my favourite features we've done in ages. We will see you
bad
all next week. Yeah, there's a Bad News piece in there as well. Yeah. If you don't know who Bad News are, they were Spinal Tap before Spinal Tap was a thing.
Yeah, the British Spinal Tap with all the guys from The Young Ones.
Yeah, exactly. It was so good.
And Possessed is the band who invented death metal, so you need to read that.
Exactly. Do you want any more bases covered, for fuck's sake? It's all in the new issue of Metal Hammer. Love metal and know your history. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.